This is Deep Blue, where we get the true life stories of BYU athletes, coaches, and fans. Here's your host, Jerem Jordan.
On today's show, we talk with a guy whose dad was the all-time leading rusher here at one point. He owns a poster of Cougar football players from the 80s still. He's one of the most creative people I know and the newest BYU TV Sports Department employee. As a producer, he is the one and only Hema Haymuli. Hema, what is up, man?
What is up, Jerem? Thank you. I mean, you're welcome for having me on the show.
I've been seeking for a while with Deep Blue to have someone on that had interviewed Ice Cube. I finally found that man.
Well, you came to the right place.
Yes.
And I have to say, me and Cube, as you know, since we're best friends
Cube.
We're on a second first name basis now. So,
yeah. Second first name basis. I love that. Okay. We'll get to that in a minute. So I'm so stoked you're with BYU TV Sports now in our department. It is awesome. One, we were all white, okay? You are Polynesian. You provide a valuable cultural addition, and obviously you have an amazing experience. But listen, you come from KSL Sports. You come from a background where your dad was Lake Haymuli. People know Lake Haymuli. I got your uncle's autograph when I was a teenager. Hema Haymuli, you're named after your uncle. You have a rich history here. Do you feel like you came home in a way being at BYU TV?
No, definitely. I think, you know, it wasn't as, like, I don't know, cathartic of a coming home, like homecoming as you would think, but I did.
We needed a banner.
There was, yeah. I didn't see the parade. it's just, there's a part, you know, I've been a BYU fan forever, you know, and even working at KSL, when you're coming from news, you try to be objective. I did a lot of covering for, like, the Utes, you know, and stuff like that, but being able to come to Provo and to get in depth with the program that I've been familiar with since I was a little boy. You know, I've had posters of all the greatest BYU players like hanging on my walls growing up, and being back in this environment definitely is it's a highlight of my career though, for sure.
A couple jobs ago, you were at Delta, and I've been told that you started creating content for them all of a sudden.
Yeah, I did.
Pre-KSL.
That's true.
So you've been in this game for a while, right?
Yeah. So, well, that's interesting. So, like, my degree is actually in aviation science. Like, that's what I graduated in.
And what does that mean?
It means I wanted to work for, like, Boeing and stuff like that. But I worked for Delta for, like, almost 10 years, and it didn't really go anywhere, per se. And so, you know, just as a hobby, I would, you know, take videos of like my brothers who are still playing football and, you know, edit those together. I would do graphics on like Photoshop and Illustrator, and it was all just a hobby, man. Like I would do sports edits of like I remember, you know, Jamal Williams going off against Toledo. And so I took a still photo of Jamal Williams and of him running against Toledo and put like flames behind him. And I just posted that like just for fun. And slowly I started thinking like, this is super cool. I wish I could do this all the time. But that's all it was just like a fleeting thought of like, that would be great if, you know, this was another life or whatever. And that's just how I started getting into these creative avenues that normally someone, you know, wouldn't think of if they're working throwing bags at Delta, you know?
Yeah, and then so you end up at KSL Sports as a producer. How'd that happen? Because that's a high-profile position.
Yeah, so, you know, slowly, my siblings, you know, my brother Helam, he played at Weber State, and I would create content for him, and then he graduated. And then my second-to-youngest brother, Houston, he's a fullback at Stanford, and when he started playing –
the overachiever of the family.
Yes, he's the one my dad's proud of. He started playing for Stanford, and I thought, you know what, like it'd be cool to make some videos of whatever he does and just try to support him in that way. Well, I started reaching out to like bloggers in the sports field, particularly SB Nation, and they had a Stanford SB Nation called Rule of Tree. And they're like, we're looking for content creators. Let us know if you want to join. Like, obviously not paid, right? But I was like, I make content. My brother's there. I want to pub him out. So I wrote them and I was like, hey, can I start creating content for you? And they were like, yeah. And so I just started doing that. Well, then, you know, Vanquish the Foe, who's also SB Nation, I started doing like little things for them.
And BYU's
SB Nation site. And after a while, I was like, this is kind of cool. This is something I could do for reals if I just, you know, try and work on my craft and get good at it. Never in a million years did I think I could work for KSL, right? Because KSL is like a blue chip, you know, news organization. Well, one of my good friends from college, he worked in production at KSL, and he was like, hey, they're hiring a graphic designer. You should apply for it. And I was like, okay. He sent me the thing. I applied for it. But then I also saw on that job board that they were hiring a sports producer. And I was like, I'll just shoot my shot. We'll see what happens. And so I started getting together a reel. And then, you know, to cap it all off, I sent a text to my uncle Vaisika Hema, who appears on KSL from time to time. And I was like, hey, I kind of want to do this sports producing thing. Like, can I write you as a reference? And he's like, yeah, I'll write you as a reference. And then that was that. And I didn't hear anything for like a week or so. And then Vi like calls me like some time later, and he's like, I know you wanted me as a reference. I did you one better. I called like the news director and asked her to give you a shot. And I was like, oh my gosh, that's crazy. And
Vi's gonna Vi, man.
Vi's gonna Vi. He's like, you know, he knows how to get to the end zone any way possible. You know?
Yes, he does.
And so
he's gonna punch the field goal.
That's how I got into KSL. And from there, I just worked on my craft. And you know, after like 4 years of working at KSL, then this opportunity presented itself, and now I'm here. So, I'm super proud to have worked my way through KSL. I'm super proud that like my Uncle Vi believed in me enough and stuck his neck out for me, quite honestly, because I didn't, you know, I wasn't a journalism major or anything like that.
Trust me, that doesn't matter.
Yeah. And yeah, so anyways, that's how I got to where I am today.
Okay, when you were hired, you posted a really meaningful post. I really liked it. You talked about how excited you were to represent your culture here. What is it that you feel that you represent and can bring to us? And like I said, I think that's really important for us to have someone with a different look at things, a different background to mm-hmm. what we do, not to mention – and we'll talk about this in a bit, but you're going to do the Kalani Sitake Coaches Show. Mm-hmm. A Tongan's going to do a Tongan show.
Yeah.
I think that's really meaningful.
Thank you. It's very special to me. When I was working at KSL, we worked a lot with the Jazz, and I would actually see Alema Harrington from time to time. And
former homie here as well. Yeah, we love Alema.
Yep, Alema's great. Yep. Also a KSL alum too. Yep. And just I would see him at different events and he would just say, what's up or whatever. Like I thought he was just being nice, you know. But he one time said to me just in passing, like at the Jazz Arena, he was like, it's nice to see another Polynesian face, you know, in the media. And I was like, that's true because there's not really sports media. It's like me and Alema. Mm-hmm. You know, and that kind of impacted me a lot to where I started, not that I didn't carry myself in a manner, you know, becoming of my people, but like before, but it just made it more conscious for me. And so when the opportunity to work here at BYU presented itself, I thought this is where we can make the biggest impact because, you know, coming from the fan experience, you know, we've had Kalani Sitake as our head coach for, what, 6 years? Seven almost or something like that?
Going into six?
Yeah, going into six. Kalani, it's super unique, right? There's only two Polynesian – of all the FBS head coaches, there's, what, like
130
or something like that. Only two are Polynesian and one is Tongan.
And both are members of the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints, which is unique.
Which is super cool. And so me as like a half Tongan, half Maori, like – what an opportunity for me to make my mark on this organization by supporting the only Tongan head coach in FBS history and to help us to, you know, further not only the church's mission and BYU's mission and the team's mission, but also like to put on for my people. You know what I'm saying?
So I'm so excited about it. Honestly, I think it's really important. And obviously the last, you know, several years, we've become more conscious of what we haven't been doing, we being society in the United States. I think this is a great move. I'm so excited. regardless, your skills speak for themselves, right?
Okay.
And you add to that the diversity that they bring. I think it's amazing. Because – so Spencer Linton, for those who don't know, if you're outside maybe the Salt Lake market, he is kind of the third string sports anchor at KSL.
Yeah.
And that's the background he comes from is and people have listened to Deep Blue. You heard the Spencer Linton story of going to Grand Junction and going to Palm Springs. It's pretty cool when he, you know, he does an excellent job of that. He really does, among the many things. You got to work with Spencer. So I already knew who you were, and I already knew you were really good because I've followed you on social media and you're super creative. And I think once before, speaking of Ice Cube, it was the – 3-on-3 tournament. What's it called again? I can't remember.
I think it's called the 3-on-3 basketball tournament.
Three on three. Okay. Yeah. I worked it for CBS Sports Network, and I went and just hung out with you guys for like an hour at KSL. And I was like, oh, I met Hema in person.
Yeah,
Hema's great. So when we posted this position, I told the boss, and so did Spencer, of course, like, hey, there's some really good candidates for this. One of them, and maybe the best one, is Hema Kamuli. Like, if we could get Hema, that'd be incredible. So this job opens up and we do some interviews and there are some great candidates and you were the best one, man.
Oh, thanks.
And so it's been super cool to see that. And we haven't even touched the surface. You've done what? A couple web chats on Media Day and a few BYSNs.
Sure.
You did a 90s show, which
a
is
90s
so cool.
Throwback,
I was so jealous because I was on vacation that day. I was like, no, I want to do that one. That's awesome.
Dude, you could have wore your like Ken Griffey Jr. stuff.
Yes, probably. I have a Ken Griffey Jr. jersey in the whole deal. Yeah, exactly. So already your creativity and skills have been brought to the table. Give us a taste of sort of what you're hoping to accomplish this fall. As as we explained, you're going to produce the BYU football with Klein Stockett, coach a show, BYU basketball with Mark Pope. I've been doing these the last 4 years. I'm so happy I'm handing it off to someone that knows what they're doing and can elevate it way better than I did it. Mark, you're going to have fun with those guys, by the way.
Yeah.
Mark Pope's insane. Good luck when he shows up 2 minutes before. and then countdown to kickoff, I did for 8 years. Our boss, Junior, Dave Phillips, did it last year. And then countdown to tip-off. We'll get to work together. So you get 4 very important shows. How are you feeling about that task this fall and winter?
Oh, man. It's a huge task. I'm humbled by, like, the opportunity to, like, you know, football, basketball, the big products, you know. Everyone, a lot of eyeballs are going to see it, especially, you know, after the seasons that we had last year and the year before even for both basketball and football. So I'm, like, super nervous. Like, it's a good nervous. It's like a nervous, you know, before you take the field to play sports or something like that. But I'm excited to see what I can do.
The previous producer sucked. You'll be fine.
Not even, dude.
I'm talking about Junior. No, I'm just playing. That's our boss.
Oh,
I'm talking about me.
Yeah, Dave, I did not say that for the record. No, just kidding.
Dave, if you hear this, let us know.
but yeah, like what I'm hoping to accomplish mostly is just you know, like you said, we, you know, in general are more conscious now. And for me, it's super important. The concept of representation matters. And I think that's what I hope to accomplish to bring to viewers is like, you know, Kalani's personality, Mark Pope's personality, maybe elements of them that you didn't know existed. Because, you know, coming from, you know, my background, for example, like I remember distinctly when like I realized like, oh, what's happening around me isn't necessarily representative of like who I am in a good sense. And what I mean is like, can I share a short story real quick? Like,
please.
You know, when I was growing up, I went to elementary school in Salt Lake. I've moved all over the place from like Salt Lake to San Diego and whatnot. But I distinctly remember when I was in Salt Lake in elementary school, our teacher gave our classroom an assignment. And that assignment was to write on a poster like a list of our favorite foods, right? And kids would write, you know, like chicken fingers or like
pizza,
macaroni pizza stuff like that. Well, I remember writing Lucipe, which is a Tonga food. Lucipe, which is like this, it's like kind of like leaves, lamb, cooked lamb in leaves, and they like wrap it up really tight and they cook it underground. So like Lucipe, Lupulu, I was writing things like taro, like all these foods that I was used to eating. And afterwards, the teacher brought the poster in front of the class and was like reading off all these things. She was reading
pizza.
Doing
her best to pronounce those.
Well, probably. And then she said like lupulu, for example, which is like beef wrapped in these leaves. And all these kids are like, ew, what is that? Did you say poop? Like things like that, which is kind of funny, right? But at the time,
you're
I was like,
no.
I didn't – I felt like I did something wrong, you know, as a little kid because I was like, oh, I didn't understand the assignment or something, you know? And that's when I realized I was like, oh, like I'm different. Like this is – like the kids were kind to me and everything like that. Like it was all fine, but there's still that difference, right? And after that moment, I started like seeking these things like in public. I would like consciously look for, you know, oh, so-and-so – he looks Tongan. Let's find out if he's Tongan. Or this song, like the singer sounds – she sings like my aunties does. Like I wonder if she's Tongan. Like I had that thirst to like identify with whatever was around me. And, you know, it wasn't until like recently, you know, like The Rock. We have like The Rock now and like Jason Momoa and like all these people in mainstream media that, you know, Polynesians can identify with, you know, back in the – 90s and early 2000s, like those weren't really around. And so I guess consciously now that I'm an adult, like that's kind of my mission statement. Like I've taken that to heart. And then, you know, it was reinforced by Alema, like saying, hey, there's not many of us out here. And that's in essence what I'm trying to accomplish now, whether it's at KSL or whether it's here at BYU. That's giving people something to identify with is kind of my mission. And, you know, it's not just Polynesian stuff, you know, like with the Mark Pope show, like I hope to bring out a personality trait that Mark Pope has that no one's seen before. Like we all know he's crazy and goofy and awesome and like he'll stand in an iceberg waving a flag around. But what else, you know, like what else is there? And I'm sure there's something in there that people watching, like a young kid is like, I identify with that. I get that.
Yeah.
And that's kind of the essence of what I'm trying to do now.
I love that. Going into Deep Blue last fall, I thought, we're not telling enough stories of our black athletes. Mm-hmm. And so it's very important to touch on that. And there are amazing stories from a lot of people that don't come from the traditional white LDS, even Utah background, right? Mm-hmm. So it's fun to be able to tell those stories in this way, right?
Yeah.
The other day someone was saying, what are your hobbies? And the first thing that came to my mind was my blank canvas is a TV show. Mm. And what music and images and video and what that I put into this that evoke sort of the story and these emotions, it's like that's my hobby. I luckily get paid for it.
Right.
But it's so fun what we get to do to craft these stories around a team that is very special.
Yes.
And if they happen to win a ton of games, that really amplifies the story.
For sure.
Which is good. And like you said, BYU's coming off this amazing year in football and men's basketball, let alone the other sports, right? There's a lot of great stories to tell, which is going to be
absolutely
amazing.
Yeah. And I can't, you know, as like you just said, being a storyteller, like finding these stories, like not only impacts you, like it speaks to you, but also instantly we start thinking about like, oh, this is like the music I can put to this story that will enhance what he's saying.
You hear it and you're like,
you see it.
Yes. I hear a song and I see a thing.
Yeah.
Like
exactly.
In high school, I remember playing around with video editing when I was like, I know I want to do this, something like this. The OT Olympics were my senior year. At Copper Hills, and I was like, oh, the power of music with video is strong. You put out some really good music videos and shows on KSL and everything. Now you get this chance here to kind of do it for us, which I again, I'm just so stoked we're having you.
Oh, thanks, man.
I'm
excited to be here too because like you said, there's so many stories to be told. Like I've watched all the Deep Blues and like I'm starting to listen to this podcast and that's like not even a 100th of the stories that are out there.
Yep. Thanks, Moroni.
Yeah.
A hundredth part.
Yep. And there's, you know, like, you know, not only current athletes, bro, you could like, we can deep dive in like all the older athletes who didn't get their stories told. And that's, for me, a storyteller, that's the coolest thing that we could possibly do. In fact, Taika Waititi, you know who he is, right?
Huge fan.
Obviously.
Huge fan.
Yeah. He's a hero of mine. And he said,
Is he Maori?
He's Maori, yeah. He spoke after winning some award. I'm pretty sure it was like a BAFTA or something. I could be wrong. But he said, like talking to like Polynesians, he's like, we are the original storytellers. And I thought that was super cool because, you know, when you think about it, that's kind of where Polynesians, we say talk story. Like, you know, you come to my house, we'll hang out, we talk story. And that's all we do is just share stories all the time. So for me, being able to do that now here at BYU and to join you, who's also a fantastic storyteller.
Oh, thank you.
Like, this will – I'm super excited to find these stories and to tell them in the months to come for sure.
I feel a different connection to general Polynesian culture because of my connections with rugby.
Oh, yeah.
It's really helped me appreciate and understand a little better, and I don't understand a ton, but – like, obviously, you know, calling rugby games well, for the Utah Warriors, it's like, okay, let's talk about all these cultures that come together on this team. And, you know, obviously the All Blacks, the Maori All Blacks, Tonga, Samoa, Fiji, you know, and so on and so forth. There's something – I don't know what it is, but there's something about rugby that is inherently Polynesian in some way that helps connect South Africa. I don't know what it is, but I'm paying way more attention to New Zealand – and Maori culture and Taika Waititi's movies. And I don't know what it is, but I love it. Like, I want to go to New Zealand one day. Like, New Zealand's super appealing to me.
Yeah.
I love it.
Yeah, we're coming up on the Olympics. And, you know, last Summer Olympics was the first year they had rugby sevens.
Yeah.
And the first team that won gold.
Fiji!
Fiji, of all places.
Which is awesome.
Yeah, because they're not even like.
Their first medal ever.
Yeah. First medal ever. First rugby medal ever, like, in general. Like, you would have thought. Odds on, like, New Zealand winning were really high, right?
Not in sevens.
Not in sevens. And, in fact, Fiji, another Polynesian island, was able to do it. And so it's just, yeah, rugby, for some reason, I don't know why either, is just – it's innately Polynesian almost because it's like – you've heard this before because obviously you're around the rugby circles. But there's a saying that it's like it's a hooligan sport played by gentlemen, right? And that – like, I'm happy to say, like, I feel like that's accurate, especially with Polynesian culture, because, like, they're big old dudes that can smash you into the ground, but then they'll pick you up after and you'll go eat food after the match, right?
Yes.
And, like, whether it's a, like, test rugby or something like that or gold medal rugby, like, they'll pound you into the ground and then pick you up and go feed you, you know? And that's kind of, I don't know, the essence of Polynesian. And it just fits with rugby, man. It's just a cool thing. Now this okay, so I want to ask you this because, you know, calling games for like the Utah Warriors and stuff like that, like obviously you get a lot of practice saying Polynesian names, right? Like, do you feel like you're getting a sense of like the culture, like saying just their names, like the Samoans and the Tongans and the Fijians? Like,
a sense, getting, yes.
Yeah.
I probably need more background.
Sure.
But I love when I connect – well, let me preface this. As a play-by-play, my main job is to say the names of the players correctly.
Yeah.
And I always have this battle of how anglicized will I make it because my audience is probably Americans or whatever watching it. So I always have this battle. But on Polynesian names, because of BYU football, I generally try to say them.
Yeah.
The that way they would be said.
Yeah.
As much as possible. Yeah. There's probably a middle ground too of like – every, you know, not every Latin American player, Gabi Garcia Fernandez.
Oh, sure.
Gabi Garcia Fernandez or whatever.
Right.
But I'm going to say Gabi. I'm not going to say Gabby.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Same idea there. But yes, the sense there is good. And South Africans, those names are very unique compared to Americans.
Yeah.
So yes, I had a game 2 weeks ago where I was like, this one's in a particular challenge.
Yeah.
But it's a fun challenge because you honor, like you're alluding to, sort of the culture and the history and the family name and the through a name.
Yes.
And how you say a name. Yes. That matters.
Exactly. And I think you do a great job. And I think of everything you do here, that probably is like one thing that ties you most closely to the Polynesian culture. Mm. Just because, like you said, it's history. The names are important. The way you say them is important. But also, you know, like we said, it's Polynesian culture is like a non-written culture, right? We're storytellers. That's how we communicated and passed it down generation
to
generation.
That's what Taika means.
That's what Taika
means. Okay.
And that's how we preserve tradition and like history and, you know, Now we can look up on like ancestry.com or whatever the what's the church's one called?
Family Search.
Yeah, Family Search. And like you can look up the history, but like Polynesians don't necessarily need that. You know what I mean? Like we already know, like, because our family tells us so much who's who and where they came from. And saying names, I just thought I'd ask you what you thought about that, because saying the names correctly and saying them is how you preserve the culture.
Yes. And I have a name that gets mispronounced. And so I like when someone says it.
Yeah.
And my name's not even hard. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But like
Jerome.
Exactly. That was my name. Jerome Kersey lived in Portland, you know, for the – so I was Jerome when I was kid. I was like, cool, I'll be Jerome. I actually – it gets messed up so much I'll order food and I'll just say my name's Jordan.
Oh,
because Jerome, Jaron, Jerome, whatever. Anyway.
Yeah.
So let's talk about your name.
Okay.
Hema. Hey, Mule. Your first name is named after your uncle.
Mm-hmm.
This is something that's cultural as well.
Yeah.
Some people think you're Hema's kid. Nope, you're Lake's kid. Yes. Hema's your uncle.
Yeah.
That even happened on an introductory Zoom here at BYU Broadcast.
Yeah. And it's totally fine. Like, it happens all the time. But you're absolutely right. It's very much a cultural thing, especially for Tongans, but Samoans do it too. Like, you name your children after other family members, which isn't strange by any stretch. Everyone does that. But more specifically, they name them after siblings, right? So it's more rare to hear a good example. Like, shout out to my little brother Houston's teammate, Gabe Reed, right? His dad is Spencer Reed, you know?
Not Gabe.
Not
who
Gabe.
Also played at BYU.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Couple Cougars. And same thing happened to my family. My dad's Lake, and instead of naming his son Lake, he named him after his brother Hema, and that's the name I have today. And it's kind of an interesting story, because what happened was, after high school, my grandpa sent my uncle Hema to live with my dad and my mom, because my uncle Hema was quote unquote like such a troublemaker that my grandpa just couldn't take it anymore. So he sent him to live with Lake.
Can I do that with my kids?
And my mom at the time was pregnant with me. And my dad said, my Uncle Hema was so obedient and so soft-spoken and so well-behaved that my dad's like, geez, like, this isn't my dad. Like, he's like, my dad's crazy. This kid, my little brother's awesome. And so that was even further incentive to name his first son after Hema. It's because Hema was such a well-behaved person. And that's how I got my name back then.
So I want to talk about your dad, because David Almodova, the BYU athletic marketing guy on campus, he's amazing and awesome. He does so much for the fan experience at games. He said that he grew up with your dad's posters on his wall. He was the man, right? So let's go back to Kahuku and Laie and – what your dad did as a player. And honestly, the kids growing up right now and don't really understand how good your dad was.
Yeah.
He was the original Jamal Williams. He was the original Luke Staley, right?
Right. We throw it back to like Oahu, right? And that's where Kahuku is, close to Laie. A lot of Polynesians that live in Laie obviously are LDS, because back in the day, and this is the same – this is the same story for my family. I'll just tell it, whatever. My grandpa moved from Tonga to Laie because that was the closest temple at the time. And he wanted to seal his family and to have that part of the gospel in their lives. And so my grandpa in Tonga, he had like a store, like a fairly successful store and a lot of land and whatnot. And he sold it to buy airplane tickets to bring his family to Laie. But he only had enough money to send like half of his family, and the rest had to stay behind. And so my grandpa, Benny is his name, he literally landed in Honolulu Airport with my dad and a couple of my uncles and walked around until he found somebody that spoke Tongan, because he didn't speak English. Like, nobody in my dad's family spoke English. And he walked around until he found this Tongan guy that spoke English. And my grandpa was like, hey, we just moved here from Tonga. We're trying to figure out where to live. And so, like, in true Polynesian fashion, that Tongan guy brought him to his home in La Haye and like let him live there and for a while. And my grandpa like washed dishes until he had enough money to bring the rest of the family over. And so that's
probably took a minute.
Oh, it took a
month.
Took a while.
Years,
yeah.
Maybe.
Yeah.
Who knows?
I mean, I don't know how much airplane tickets were back
then.
Yeah,
I don't know either. It's wild.
But he did it, and eventually my whole family came over to La Haye, and now they're in La Haye, and now my grandpa's got a family of boys that have nothing to do. They don't know what to do, and my dad attends Koku High School, and this is in like the early 80s.
Red Raiders, baby.
Red Raiders, baby. And my dad decided to try out for the football team. And back then, it was a kind of a big deal because back then, most of the football players were Samoan. The Tongans didn't really play much football. And my dad was like one of the first real, like first Tongans to like actually do something with football. But it's also interesting because my dad only had a background in rugby, goes back to rugby because they played rugby in Tonga.
What position did he play?
Oh, he was probably a back.
Yeah.
You know?
Quick.
He was quick. He was, you know, skinny, but he was tough and he was strong.
Mm-hmm.
And so he decides to try out for the football team. And he doesn't know any of the rules. All he knows is he's supposed to run to the other end of the field, right? And so my dad's just like trucking people, knocking people over. And,
well, honestly, rugby with the ball in hand, it's the same idea.
Yeah. And
go,
like,
go through someone.
And like, obviously, like the play doesn't stop till the ball's down, right?
Yeah.
And like, if the ball's not down, no matter how many whistles are blowing, you just keep going. And so my dad just had a habit of you keep running people over, even though the play technically is like down, right? Dead or whatever.
Little Forrest Gump moment there. Just keep going.
Just keeps going. And so after, you know, my dad only played football for like 2 years before he started breaking all these records in Oahu, not just for the school, but for like the island too. And yeah, that's how he got into football. And actually, if you guys like want to see old school footage of him running people over in high school, I actually found some video of him when he was a senior. There was like a senior bowl type thing, and there's video of my dad in Kahuku Red Raider gear running people over, and it's a lot of fun. You can look. It's like on my social media, or we'll post.
Did you put
something.
It on YouTube?
No, it's just on my like Twitter, I think.
Yeah. And what's your Twitter handle?
Oh, it's at @x_hems, H-E-M-S.
Yeah.
And yeah, so you can find the video there. I'll tweet something out. It's a lot of fun. Old school stuff.
So he learns the rules,
mm-hmm.
and he's pretty good, and yeah. he's recruited by BYU.
Yeah.
But Utah was in there too.
Yes. This is a good
did
story.
Did he almost go to Utah?
He did. Okay, this is a great story, and I'll preface this by saying, like, Coach Ron McBride is like an old family friend of ours, and every time I see him anywhere, whether it's at a Utah game or Weber State something or whatever, like we always say what's up, and he always remembers us and gives us a big hug. And so the story goes, and Ron McBride told me this, and this was later, you know, backed up by other people. Ron was actually recruiting my dad to play for Utah, and he recruited my dad for months and was just like – keeping tabs on my dad.
What year is this?
This would be like 82 probably.
Okay.
And he all of a sudden stops getting calls like from my dad and stops just black, right? Like it just goes silent. Radio silence.
The original ghosting.
Yeah. My dad ghosted Ron McBride. So Ron's like, something's up. I'm going to fly to Hawaii and see what's going on. And he hops on a plane and he goes – to Kahuku to go find my dad. And he shows up to my dad's house and knocks on the door. And my dad answers the door. And the first thing he says is like, what happened? I just don't hear from you anymore. And he goes inside and starts talking with my dad and finds out that that my dad has actually been talking to Norm Chow. And
at BYU.
Yep, at BYU. And my dad brings like these drawings on some paper. And my dad's like, yeah, Norm Chow's been coming over. And look, he's showing me all these plays. And he's they're going to let me run the ball, Ron. And
this is coming off of Jim McMahon, but
yeah. And Ron McBride looks at the drawings, looks at my dad, and says, Norm Chow is a liar. He's like, Norm Chow is lying. He's like, they run a different offense and you will never touch the ball. And my dad's like, oh, I don't know, coach. I don't know. And Ron McBride, this is his words. He actually says this. He told me while he was telling the story. He's like, and I don't know how they convinced him. It was probably someone in the brotherhood at church or something like that.
The brotherhood at church.
That got into your dad's parents' ears. But I knew at that point that Lock K was going to go to BYU. And makes sense because my dad was, you know, my grandpa, my grandma, they were very LDS, very religious, obviously. They moved there for religious reasons. And so, of course, they wanted him to go to BYU. Of course, they wanted him to go to the school named after Brigham Young, you know. And that's how the story goes. And Ron McBride says, after that day, I swore that I would have a Haemuli play for me. And he missed out on me just, you know, because he was in between jobs around then, right, when I was coming up. So he decided to sign my brother Helam at Weber State. So that's how my brother.
So he got one.
Yep. So he got one. And that's how he ended up. That's how Helam ended up at Weber State was Coach Mack. Coach Mack signed him because he didn't want to miss out on another Haemuli.
That's amazing. Okay. So Lake becomes the all-time leading rusher at BYU. He's incredible. Mm-hmm. Hema is really good as well. Like I mentioned, I got his autograph after a game in like 95 or 90, yeah. 94 or something. But he was awesome. Now, you mentioned your brother Helam at Weber State. Did you play?
I played in high school.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What high school did you go to?
I went to Viewmont in Bountiful.
Go Vikings?
Yeah. And we actually lived in a part of Bountiful that could have really gone to either. There's like Bountiful, which is just up the hill. Viewmont is on like 1000 North, like in the middle. And then there's like Woods Cross, which is further south. And like I could have gone to either of those schools, but I went to Viewmont because Viewmont's head coach saw me playing when I was in Little League. This is kind of funny though. The weird thing about Bountiful football back in the day, I don't know if it still is this way. If you weigh a certain amount, they put a big X on your helmet and you have to be on the line. Have you heard of this before?
No.
Yeah, it's called being an X-Men. So –
the original.
Yeah. So
I'm Wolverine.
So, you know, I'm in like junior high and there's a weight limit and I obviously am a big kid and I exceed that weight limit. So I'm on the line. Well, I play a year of that being like a left tackle. And
Very exciting as a kid.
Very exciting. You just stand there. My dad's like, that's it. We're going to go play somewhere else. And so the next year, I think this is in like – 8th grade. He actually drove me down to Provo every day to play because of the leagues down here. You didn't have to weigh a certain amount or whatever. You just had to try out and you could be a running back.
That's like an hour drive.
Yeah. And he would drive me every single day after
wow.
school. And so I played for Canyon View Junior High is what it – I don't know where it is. It's close to Orem High. And that's where I played as a running back. And it was so much fun because I would just truck fools. And
you were
like
the
that.
Chris Fuamatu Malibu.
Yeah. And I played against like a bunch of guys. You know, I'm pretty sure – like I'll have to look back at like look back at my little photos and things. But I'm pretty sure I played against like Harvey and stuff like that growing
yeah.
up.
Harvey Unga, Tim Few in the area.
Mm-hmm. Yep. And so yeah, it was a lot of fun, a lot of good memories. And then when I became a 9th grader – I went back up to Bountiful to play at Viewmont because the coach wanted me to play for the high school team. So, yeah. So that's – I mean, but that's the extent of my career. I got to say, like playing – like having a dad like Lake Haemuli be your coach is both awesome and then unbearably sucky at times because, bro, like even after practice, my dad was just running me, like running gassers and like, you know – you know how dads are.
Yep.
But like super valuable experience and he taught me everything I knew. I credit a lot of my success, you know, because he would teach me like little things that like high school coaches weren't even teaching their athletes. Mm. He would teach me things like, you know, look at their hips, like how the linebacker's hips are lined up. You know, linemen will cheat and they'll stare at where they're going to go at this level. So look at their eyes and they'll tell you where like they're stunning to and stuff like that. And I used all that information to help my like running game as in junior high and in high school. And like, I feel like that's why I did so well. It's not because I was like talented or anything like that. It was just because my dad was Lakehi Muli and he taught me all that stuff.
Oh, that's amazing, man. What's it like to have Houston at Stanford, your brother?
It's a lot of fun.
You live through him a little bit? Are you a Cardinal fan? Like,
oh, for sure. Yeah. I mean, I'm definitely a Cardinal fan until he graduates and then I probably won't care.
Then you're done.
Yeah. But it's a lot of fun. Yeah, because
– he's funny too. You brought him into the office?
Yeah.
He was awesome.
Dude.
He was so cool.
The funniest thing too is like Alana, like she – he was like working in my office, like on the computer, and Alana comes in and says hi to him, like thinking it was me. And he, you know, obviously like doesn't want to embarrass anybody. So he's just like, yeah. And like, he's like, I talked to her for like a minute pretending I was you.
Hey, can you turn in that production report? He's like, yeah,
yep,
totally.
Yep. But yeah, he's super funny. Yeah. And just, you know, he's the second to last of five kids. I'm the oldest of five. He's second to last. And I feel like with every brother, like there was me, then Helam, then I have a sister, and then Houston. With each like kid, we learned more and more about like how, you know, recruiting works and how like the football world changes. And so he's definitely benefiting. Like, I'm not saying he's successful because
of it. You would have been fourth. You'd be at Stanford.
Yeah. He definitely like knows like the deal. And you know, being siblings, like I helped him out as much as I could. Helam helps him out as much as he can. Heaven does the same thing, my sister.
Your sister's name's Heaven?
Yeah, my sister's
That's
name's Heaven.
Amazing.
Yeah.
I love that.
She's not as heavenly as you would assume. No, just kidding. Love you, Hev. But yeah, I just, you know, as with each year, you know, each kid, we learned more and more about how things work. And so now he's poised to have a very successful year. He's a fifth year senior at Stanford. He's already graduated, so he's got his degree.
Oh, dude, that degree too.
Yeah.
Woo.
And so he's a biology major.
Oh, he chose an easy one. That's yeah, right.
I know. He has so much time to spend on studying. And yeah, so he's going to probably try his hand at the NFL after this year. But
nice.
I'm hoping I can catch some games this year, you know, because it's a fun memory. And who knows if the next brother will play anywhere like that. But yeah.
That's exciting, man. Well, that's sweet. I'm so happy you are here, as I mentioned. And you bring this rich history. And I love when people find out you're Lakehi's kid. It's
yeah.
Like, dude, Lakehi's kid's here? Like, Lakehi's a legend. And now you're creating your own legacy, right? And those are some amazing stories. So thanks for being on the show, man. It's
no
good to
problem.
Know that at least one person's listening, which is cool. So, yeah, we're going to try and double that next year. So that's kind of our goal. But anyway, Hema, we appreciate it, man. And, again, you can watch Hema's produced shows on BYU Football with Klein Stocky, BYU Basketball with Mark Pope, Countdown to Kickoff, Countdown to Tip-Off, and I'm sure some other stuff.
Yeah, we'll see what happens.
It's going to be awesome, man.
I appreciate it. Thanks for having me on.
That'll do it for us. Listen to previous episodes on the BYU Radio app or where podcasts are found. For Hema Haymooley and producer Trent Reimschussel, I'm Jerem Jordan. You've just listened to Deep Blue on BYU Radio.